I also began to have prophetic dreams and to recall details of my past lives. I kept most of this to myself. When I did disclose the details of one of my experiences to my husband at the time, he replied, "I could have you committed, you know." I decided that silence was a better idea. In 1980, I divorced my first husband, and in 1986, I remarried. My second husband and I are happily married. However, after only 9 months of adjusting to our new partnership, I began to realize that something strange was going on, something I had been experiencing all my life but had not been aware of consciously. One beautiful, sunny day in July of 1987, I got out of bed and went into the bathroom. Gazing into the mirror, I noticed something odd. I had a small cut, a hairline slice nearly an inch long, which ran horizontally across my top lip. It nearly blended into the red of my lip and would have been easy to miss. Except that I knew I was supposed to see it. Suddenly, a recognition moved from my subconscious mind into my consciousness. I am an experiencer, an extraterrestrial encounter experiencer. Within a few weeks, the baby dreams began. These dreams, or trips, as I sometimes prefer to call them, involved a small, sickly newborn. Although there were no genitalia, I knew the baby was a boy. He was gray in color, with such thin skin he seemed to be almost transparent. He was so listless he looked as if he must be dying. But when I held the baby, his skin began to change color. His complexion gradually went from gray to pink, and he opened his eyes to look at me. He had no eyebrows or eyelashes, and his eyes were oval-shaped and slanted. His eyes were blue, with only a little bit of white on either side of the iris. In the first baby dream, I was also introduced to the short little gray beings commonly called the Grays. I prefer to call them the Gray People. I realized at once that in some as yet unclear way the Gray People had played a very important role in my 140 life ever since my own babyhood. I was only mildly shocked by this realization. One morning after waking up from a baby dream, I fell into a very light sleep state. "Who is the baby's father?" I asked. A non-human male appeared, tall and very slim with long, wavy blonde hair, and blue eyes identical to the baby's. He was striding toward me in the vision, and he seemed angry. Just as he reached me, I bolted awake. As fall turned to winter, the trips continued. There were nights I awoke from these trips to the realization that nothing in my life would ever be normal again. Nothing would ever be the same because both my husband and I were being abducted. We were experiencing regular, frequent extraterrestrial encounters. Fortunately, we could ask one another, "Honey, do you think I'm crazy?" And know that the response would be, "Of course not, dear. My husband and I have been poked, probed, and injected, tissue samples taken, our body fluids withdrawn. Eggs and sperm have been removed, tests have been conducted, our bodies scanned. What an amazing thing it is to get out of bed on a winter's morning in the snowy, cold northeast, to discover that your face and neck look sunburned. Try explaining that to the people you work with every day, the people who know you haven't been to the Virgin Islands recently or even out of town." There were weeks when physical markings on our bodies would appear again and again. I began taking photographs of these rashes, bruises, and other strange markings. I now have quite a collection of photos. One summer night when my husband was away on a business trip, I let the dog outside at about 10 p.m. As soon as I let the dog in, the cat, determined to have equal time, meowed to go out. He jumped up on my shoulder and we strolled slowly down the length of the driveway, enjoying the warm night air. At the end of the driveway, I turned and looked up at the star-studded sky above the house. A telepathic voice said, "You are connected to us." I felt connected to something, and this released in me simultaneous feelings of love, hate, fear, and anticipation. I returned to the house, knowing that I would be visited that night by extraterrestrials. This was my first conscious close encounter, as opposed to the many dreams and night visions, or trips. When the three Gray People entered my bedroom later on that night, Around 1 a.m., I was fully conscious, wide awake. An eerie, cold, white light was flooding the room as the three little grey people approached the bed. I found I couldn't move. But I could hear the low, even hum of something moving up and down the length of my body. Nothing actually touched me, yet I felt a subtle sense of some kind of radiating energy. It did not hurt, and I had no feelings of fear. When I felt their energy receding, the white light disappeared. Suddenly, the sounds of night resumed. It had been abnormally silent during the visit, no highway noise, no crickets chirping, total silence. I-142, looked at the clock, only 7 minutes had passed. It was as if time had stood still. Later, I took the cat outdoors again, this time to see if there was any sign of the visitors. There was nothing, not even a star in the sky, which by then had clouded over. As a veteran of many such visits now, I can honestly say that I believe what the extraterrestrial visitors are doing to us is in no way experimental. They know exactly what they are doing to us as a species, and have been doing it quite knowingly for a long time. There is an exchange occurring between the two species. Some would say that the exchange is not balanced, not in our favor. The visitors do invade our homes, render us helpless, and take what they feel they are entitled to, eggs, sperm, blood, tissue, DNA, whatever they want or need to enhance their own species. We must acknowledge the fact that the great people have been coming to the Earth for hundreds, perhaps thousands of years or longer. They have been interacting with humans for generations and, I believe, there is a positive aspect to the relationship. Over time, they have aided us in our evolution as a species. The body scans, which occur on a very regular basis in the lives of most abductees, serve to keep the visitors informed regarding our health status. The medical examinations inform them about the levels of toxins in our bodies, thus tracking the amounts of pesticides and pollution in our environment. Could this be one reason why so many abductees report that the visitors have strongly advised them to clean up the environment? I believe they are working on our body energy as well, keeping everything in balance. For me, these checkups typically occur several times a year. It is almost as if they have me on a regular schedule of visits, balancing my body's energies and testing me for toxic buildup. Both my husband and I are, by the way, in excellent health. At times when illness has threatened, I have called upon the visitors to please, take care of it. I feel that since they have the freedom to use our bodies for their own purposes, it is their responsibility to keep us healthy. One Christmas season, my husband and I began to feel ill with stuffy noses and the onset of flu-like symptoms. As we sat watching television one evening, I noticed a ball of blue light float through the air across the room. Later that night, I saw the ball of blue light again, this time floating across the bedroom ceiling. When my husband climbed into bed beside me, we held hands while I asked the Creator to minister to us through the angels as we slept. Despite our discomfort, aches, and pains, we both fell asleep immediately. In the middle of the night, my husband felt so restless he decided to sleep in the guest bedroom. Later on, I awoke to the sensation of something touching the right side of my head above my temple. It was a tickly, electric feeling. Suddenly, and even though my eyes were closed, I saw the ball of blue light again. This time, the energy 144 ball entered the right side of my head and floated across to the left side. The left side of my body began to shake. Then I felt my nasal passages begin to clear. My eyes stopped burning, my headache went away, the symptoms I had been suffering just disappeared. I knew I was being healed. "Thank you," I said. "Please go to my husband now." Then I sat up and, for some unknown reason, underscore turned to examine the wall behind my head. Just above the pillow, a pattern of light about 7 inches high lit up the wall. The light image looked exactly like an angel with its wings folded. I couldn't believe it. I kept opening my eyes wider and wider, trying to get a closer look. The light did not come from the bedroom windows. There was no underscore explanation for it. And I have not seen it again. The next morning, both my husband and I felt fine. Our symptoms were gone. We knew that something had connected with us the night before, something that was angelic or extraterrestrial in nature. There seems to be a much larger picture than I had originally thought in regards to the whos and whys of these experiences in my life, because I also have had these types of experiences with what seems to be angelic contact. Yet, I wonder, are these beings angels? Or are they extraterrestrials, operating in the form of beneficent messengers, the form traditionally ascribed to angels? The most beautiful encounter experience I've had to date was with a being I thought was an angel. But this experience, too, left me with questions. My husband was away on business when I awoke in the middle of the night to see the most beautiful being standing beside my bed. I could feel his love. The being looked androgynous, but there was an element of masculinity present. He had wavy blonde hair that fell to his shoulders, and wore a long white robe. His arms were folded, his hands tucked into the deep sleeves of the robe. He did not have wings. He stood by my bed in an attitude of protection, his black eyes steadily watching, looking in my direction without looking directly at me. It was as if he were guarding me. Suddenly, he began to disintegrate into millions of tiny, sparkling fragments. It looked like fireworks, and then he was gone. For almost a year afterward, I was unable to relate this incident to anyone without crying because the effect on me was so profound. Still, I had questions. What exactly was this being with black eyes, this being without wings? Could angels actually be aliens? Might the great people be capable of shape-shifting, changing themselves to look like angels, somehow manifesting in any form acceptable to the mind of the human being? There is, I am convinced, an alien-angel connection. How tightly bound that connection may be, however, is something I am not sure of. There was a particular angel, ET entity who showed up regularly to offer me advice and guidance. I could never remember much of what she told me, however, once I returned to the waking state. One night, finding myself in her presence, I asked, 146, why is all this happening to me? This time, her answer was imprinted on my soul. You are being adjusted in order that you may offer others the choice of staying or leaving in times of crisis. Soon enough, I learned what the entity meant by this statement. During the summer of 1990, I had an unusual dream in which I found myself at the dentist's office. I was seated in one of those low-slung chairs you would find in any dentist's office, except that there were two or three of the very short, bald, gray people walking around. They each looked busy, focused on his own individual responsibilities. Then the dentist came into the room. He was of average height, but dressed completely in black. Black crew neck underscore sweater, black slacks, and his eyes were slightly slanted. He approached the chair on one side and asked me to open my mouth. He didn't touch my teeth as one would expect, but put something inside my mouth. I could feel a kind of warm assurance that seemed to be radiating from his clothing. Whatever he put into my mouth did not hurt initially. Then it was shoved up into my soft palate and I could feel it moving up into place between my eyes, and possibly into my brain. There was a very odd sensation between my eyes that felt erotic as well as uncomfortable, then painful. It's uncomfortable. Stop, stop, I cried. My head hurt upon awakening the next morning. When I got up, I realized that I was seeing light in front of my eyes. It was almost as if the light was coming from my eyes. My bedroom was bathed in light. As I moved about, my headache went away and my vision gradually returned to normal. I now realize that the dentist's dream was actually the insertion of an implant. This implant was placed in my head, possibly in my brain, by extraterrestrials or someone not from here. This implant was inserted in order to enhance my awareness and psychic ability. Now, years later, I look at the experience objectively, knowing that, because of the implant, my abilities as a psychic and eventually as a remote viewer slash remote healer were purposefully enhanced. I was being adjusted so that, Sometime in the future, I would be capable of offering others the choice of staying or leaving in times of crisis. In the fall of 1990, three gray people led me into a white room to witness the implant insertion procedure on another human. The abductee was a white male with short brown hair. His eyes were closed and he was reclining in the same kind of dentist chair I had found myself in during my own experience. One of the gray people came up behind the chair with two small squares of light, one in each hand. The squares were laid against the man's head, one behind each of his ears, and I watched as the light was absorbed into his skull. Many experiencers report the insertion of a small, BB-sized object, typically in the sinus area, tear ducts, or ears. Theories regarding the purpose of extraterrestrial implants vary, including the possibility that they are tracking devices and/or communications technology. 148 greater than. About 6 months later, I met this man. In this physical reality, we are now the very best of friends. We feel that the gray people introduced us, in a rather strange way, for a reason. One day in 1996, this same friend called to recommend that I read Cosmic Voyage by Dr. Courtney Brown, see references, page 316, a book about scientific remote viewing. Since my friend tends to be more skeptical than I about these things, his opinion is, I believe, quite reliable. I knew nothing about remote viewing, but I read the book. Almost immediately, I announced to my husband that I very much wanted to attend Dr. Brown's Farsight Institute to train to become a remote viewer. And the following autumn, I flew to Atlanta for my first week of training at the Farsight Institute. A skill that must be taught by trained professionals, remote viewing is the ability to accurately perceive information at great distances across space and time. Anyone can be taught the techniques, and the reliability of individuals trained in remote viewing is thought to be much greater than that of the best untrained psychics. It is not only a fascinating adventure, but a scientific exploration into the workings of the conscious, unconscious, or the subspace mind or soul. Remote viewing allows the participant's unconscious mind to communicate with his or her conscious mind. Training then allows the participant to accurately record information gleaned from the subspace mind or soul. I've seen the past and I've peeked into the future. Using remote viewing techniques, I have targeted places, events, and people from times distant in the past and way ahead in the future. I've traveled off a planet to other worlds, other dimensions. The remote viewing experience is both fulfilling and inspiring. It provides a grand overview of who we are and where we stand in the universes. Remote viewing is unlimited in its potential and has been used to locate missing persons, to diagnose illness, even to heal. Remote viewing is also one way to initiate contact with extraterrestrials. At the Farsight Institute, one of the first things most of the students in my group noticed was the enormous amount of ET contact we were experiencing at night during the week we were there. Almost all of the Institute students in my group were abductees, experiencers. In fact, I would estimate that 90% of the trainees, to date there have been over 100 Farsight Institute graduates, are close encounter experiencers. So none of us were frightened. Instead, we would gather around the breakfast table each morning and discuss the previous night's encounters. During these discussions, some students would recall encounter time spent in otherworldly classrooms. Sometimes we would remember encounter time spent together. One night, two of the instructors were taken up into a spacecraft above the hotel where we all stayed during our week of training. Later on, the event was remote viewed, confirming it in our minds. By the time my plane left Atlanta for home, I had decided to change careers. At the very least, I was determined to spend the next year training and developing my skills as a remote viewer. After advancing through the second level of training, in which 50 targets were remote viewed, with a mentor monitoring me by telephone, I returned to Atlanta for the advanced training course. Advanced level remote viewing results in a keener detection of target information, and may lead to more conscious ET contact for many students. During the week of advanced training, we received complex protocols on extraterrestrial targets and targeted the Galactic Federation, which is like a United Nations for many extraterrestrial species throughout the universes. As I had been warned, the week at Farsight Institute was one of the most intense and exciting experiences of my life, with a lot of ET contact. One significant physical event that occurred during this time was the disappearance of a rather large benign cyst from my back. I had been thinking how convenient it would be if the visitors were to remove it for me, since my doctor had told me that if a surgeon were to excise it, I would be left with a hole in my back. So one day while in my hotel room, I thought, "You've had so much control over my body all of my life, couldn't you at least remove the cyst? Please." The next day, I wore a lightweight but slightly itchy mohair sweater to the training sessions. Reaching up to scratch my back, my hand brushed the cyst. It felt softer, different. Suddenly, it broke apart. The cyst drained over a period of 2 days. Then it simply healed up, leaving no trace of scar tissue or any other indication that a cyst of that size had been embedded in my back. Several months after advanced EI, I began to use my remote viewing skills in a new way, remote healing. The healing potential of remote viewing has become my full-time job, and I am currently the founder of a network of remote healers from all over the country. My first remote healing, however, was spontaneous. My youngest sister called one night in early August of 1997 to inform me that our sister Jane required outpatient surgery to unblock severely clogged neck arteries. She had been scheduled for 2 separate surgeries after an angiography had revealed arterial blockage on the left side of 75%, with 80% blockage on the right side. That evening, I began to meditate as usual. An image of Jane appeared before me. And in that moment, I knew that I could help her with her physical problem. I imagined myself shrinking, getting smaller and smaller until I was small enough to move into her left neck artery. I was probably there astrally. I moved to her collarbone and entered the artery. It was dark, so I created a tool for myself made from white light, a scraper that also radiated light. I held this tool out in front of me and moved. Angiography is an X-ray of the vessels of the body, in this case to determine the degree of obstruction due to cholesterol plaques. 152. It in an arc, swinging it back and forth, scraping off the cholesterol lining her artery. As the tool touched the plaques, which looked a lot like brie cheese, the cholesterol melted like wax, dripping into the artery. I instructed the cholesterol to pass into the waste system and leave Jane's body by the normal elimination process. I repeated this meditation several more times. Each time I entered my sister's left neck artery, the opening was larger, cleaner, obviously healthier. I knew that something was happening. On August 19, Jane underwent the first scheduled surgery. The surgeon noticed that, to his surprise, the blockage had already been reduced by 15-25%. He completed the procedure without incident. The following evening, I called Jane's house and her husband informed me that she was still in the hospital, experiencing some complications. I immediately began a remote viewing meditation, in which I traveled to my sister's bedside. There, I pictured a blood pressure monitor with the indicator gradually falling from an elevated to a normal reading. I pictured rich, oxygenated blood circulating throughout her system, relieving her of headache pain. The next afternoon, I called Jane's home once again. My sister answered the phone. She was in the middle of making dinner. "Since my headache went away and my blood pressure dropped last night, they let me come home this morning," my sister announced. When I asked her what time her symptoms had cleared, she said, "Sometime before midnight." I conducted the remote viewing session at 11 p.m. A week or so later, my sister went to see her doctor. When she informed him that my sister did this, she went into my artery with a scraper and cleaned it out. He appeared nonchalant. "Tell her that whatever she's doing, keep it up," he said, "because we have to operate soon on the other side." I continued to use the remote viewing technique, this time to work on her right neck artery. I was able to conduct 6 to 8 sessions before Jane's ultrasound in September. The scan revealed that the cholesterol level had dropped by 40%. No further treatment was required. The second surgery was cancelled. This was, for me, an overwhelming, humbling, and empowering experience. I realized how readily this type of healing technique could be incorporated into remote viewing protocols. And I knew that anyone with training in remote viewing could utilize these techniques in order to heal people at a distance. It was an incredible discovery. But certainly not a new discovery. This technique is, I soon discovered, very similar to certain ancient shamanic healing rituals. Military remote viewers, I was told, had also stumbled across the healing potential of remote viewing. And, once I began to network, contacting other remote viewers regarding healing techniques, I was amazed to discover that others, too, were exploring the idea of remote healing. 154 underscore by the end of the year, I had organized a team of a dozen remote healers. Some viewers had been trained at the Farsight Institute. Others had attended the Monroe Institute in Virginia or had completed Sylvan Mind Control training workshops. See Chapter 18, we all felt very strongly that we had been guided by other, higher powers to join forces as remote healers. We called ourselves the Lightkeepers Remote Viewing, Remote Healing Network. All members of the Lightkeepers have noted an increase in extraterrestrial contact since forming the network. We feel that we are being guided, assisted in the development of our remote viewing and remote healing skills. Several mornings, I have awakened to the sound of a voice instructing me in the use of specific remote healing techniques. One night just recently, I had an encounter experience with a group of extraterrestrials I believe are directing us in our remote healing endeavors. Unlike the gray people, these ETs are very tall, over 6 feet. They are muscular, rugged, masculine-looking beings with gold and tan-colored skin. They look intimidating, but are very gentle beings. I found myself feeling very grateful to be with them, yet afraid to look the beings in the eye. Other members of the Lightkeepers Network report encounters with these same beings. Sometimes it is difficult to consciously recall the exact healing techniques and procedures taught to us during encounter experiences. But I feel that these beings are here now for a reason, and that the information they are sharing will become more and more conscious as time goes on. I also believe that as we pursue the study of remote viewing, we will naturally move to higher levels of awareness. Many of us are experiencing extraterrestrial encounters that are on a more conscious level than we've experienced in the past. So, for us, the extraterrestrial experience is now becoming more and more a part of this physical reality. This has brought some of us to another level of awareness, one in which we experience interdimensional blood through in the form of smells, sounds, even visions. For example, many experiencers recognize distinctive odors they associate with an interdimensional overlap and the presence of a specific ET species. For example, the gray people are said to smell spicy, sweet, or smoky. This is one aspect of our evolution toward an existence in integrated dimensional realities. Strange smells, balls of light, glimpses of other life forms. The blood through of interdimensional experience requires a shifting of one's perception of reality to a more multi-leveled concept of what is real. This requires a truly flexible attitude, something that evolves with much self-acceptance and self-validation. One must really learn to go with the flow in order to be able to integrate the anomalies underscore into one's daily life. I have now completed over 150 hours of training as a remote viewer. I teach remote viewing to students across the US, and I coordinate the Lightkeepers Network. There are not many days when I'm not 156C up for remote viewing, ET contact, and the tweaking of my conscious mind. There are times, however, when I realize that the good old days of mundane concerns and everyday routine are over for me. Remote viewers learn one fact very quickly: the soul that travels, the person who bilocates, cannot stop the drive to seek the truth. We must travel until the subspace ride comes to a complete halt, and no one can be sure, consciously, of exactly where their soul ride will end.